This is Nachyumi, Sefer Melachim Bet, chapter 25, the last chapter of Sefer Melachim. In the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu's reign, Nebuchadnezzar initiates his final, ultimately devastating siege of Yerushalayim. The city is taken, and Tzidkiyahu flees, only to be captured and brought in chains before the king of Babylonia. Tzidkiyahu's sons are slaughtered in front of him, and he is then blinded and cast into prison in Babylonia. In the meantime, Nebuzaradan, the captain of Nebuchadnezzar's army, oversees the absolute destruction of Jerusalem. The temple and all the prominent houses in the area are burnt to the ground. The text describes in great detail how the ornate vessels and expensive decorative components of the temple, originally designed and fashioned in King Shlomo's time, are smashed and their shattered material carried off to Babylonia. The troops capture a small group of elite individuals who had remained behind to administer the city. They are dragged before the king of Babylonia and executed. Nebuchadnezzar appoints a governor, Gedaliah ben Achikam, to lead the remaining population of Yehuda. Gedaliah's policy was to respect and cooperate with the Babylonian authorities, not to flee from them or challenge them. At first, it appears that he wins the support and endorsement of the community. However, a small band of rebels, led by Yishmael ben Netanya, who was a descendant of the Davidic royal line, assassinate Gedaliah and all those who were with him. This upheaval attracts the ire of the Babylonian government and leads to the escape of the rest of the Jews to Egypt for refuge. 37 years after the first wave of exile, the perspective of the king of Babylonia changes, and he adopts a more compassionate and considerate attitude toward the deposed and imprisoned Jehoiachin. This, of course, is no longer Nebuchadnezzar, but his son. The king of Babylonia frees Jehoiachin from prison and elevates his throne above those of all the other kings whom he had conquered or subdued. For the rest of his life, Jehoiachin eats at the table of the king of Babylonia, his dignity and the dignity of Yehuda restored. The book of Melachim concludes with the same essential themes that have characterized it throughout: Jewish earthly sovereignty as represented in the monarchy, Jewish religious dedication as represented in the Beit HaMikdash, and the relationship between them. As the Davidic kingdom is dismantled and stripped of its riches, so is the temple. As the palace is emptied of its attendants and officers, so is the temple. And as the glorious houses of the king and of the nobles are set aflame and burned to the ground, so is the temple. The parallelism between the destruction of both edifices is a symbolic representation of the parallels in their function and their interconnectedness, a subject that really occupies the entire book of Melachim from start to finish. The rise of the monarchy and its stabilization is initially understood and presented as a precursor to the establishment of the presence of the true King of Israel, Hashem, in the midst of the nation through the construction of the temple. The Jewish people knew that a strong and competent human government was necessary on a societal level to prevent a descent into chaos, and on a religious level to provide the kind of environment that would allow for spiritual growth and the sanctification of God's name. When preserving the monarchy became an end in itself, however, the sovereignty of Israel stood in the way of the holy mission of the Jewish people rather than facilitating it. Hence, they had to go into exile, to rebuild, to refocus, and then return. When the material and political aspirations of the regime trumped its sense of transcendent purpose and covenantal responsibility, when the struggle for power and domination replaced the search for knowledge and closeness to the Almighty, simply stated, when the Beit HaMikdash was no longer the focus of the Beit HaMelech, when the house of the king was out of sync with the house of God, then the entire infrastructure was condemned to collapse. Tzidkiyahu is treated particularly harshly by Nebuchadnezzar, who takes him to task and deliberately tortures him both psychologically and physically. The accounts in Sefer Melachim and Divrei Yamim agree that Tzidkiyahu violated his oath of loyalty to Nebuchadnezzar by rebelling against him, thereby incurring the Babylonian king's wrath. Sefer Divrei Yamim emphasizes that Tzidkiyahu was in fact punished by Hashem for swearing falsely to Nebuchadnezzar and desecrating his name. The Talmud recounts a fascinating anecdote according to which Tzidkiyahu witnessed Nebuchadnezzar engaged in a grotesque act, consuming a live rabbit, Nebuchadnezzar made Zedekiah swear in the name of Hashem never to divulge this secret, which he feared would lead to his disgrace in the eyes of others. Years later, at a juncture when Babylonia seemed more vulnerable, Zedekiah sought release from his vow from the Sanhedrin and was therefore able to spread gossip about Nebuchadnezzar, apparently hoping it would weaken the reputation of the great king and inspire others to side with him in his rebellion against the depraved emperor. Nebuchadnezzar confronted Zedekiah on his treachery and eventually approaches the Sanhedrin, who defend their right to absolve petitioners of their vows. Nebuchadnezzar replies that while they may have the right to cancel vows that are purely between man and God, they have no right to cancel a vow made to another person behind that person's back. The elders of the Sanhedrin are speechless, and they sit on the ground in mourning. And the final phase of the destruction of Jerusalem begins. The message of the story is profound and poignant. Because Zedekiah had sworn allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar in the name of Hashem, his subsequent disregard for that oath was nothing less than a desecration of Hashem's name. Sure, Zedekiah could rationalize his change of heart and try to justify his decision to violate his word, whether that meant, as in the text, declaring independence from Babylonia, or, per the Midrash, revealing hidden truths about Nebuchadnezzar to the public. And he may have been able to win over the rabbis and scholars and persuade them to endorse his choice. However, the legality of his strategy notwithstanding, the result is a chilul Hashem, a negative reflection upon the Almighty. In the eyes of Nebuchadnezzar, Zedekiah was openly demonstrating that invoking the name of his God meant nothing to him, it was just a political tool. This undoubtedly constitutes a chilul Hashem, a desecration of the name of God. Moreover, in utilizing technical loopholes to free himself from his promise behind Nebuchadnezzar's back, Zedekiah shows little or no respect for the Babylonian king, who is the victim of his treachery, and who is probably now even more resentful toward the people, religion, and God of Israel. This adds another dimension to the chilul Hashem involved. This failure of Zedekiah was not an isolated act. It reflected a lack of concern in general with the mission of the Jewish people and the ultimate goal of the Mikdash, sanctification of Hashem's name across the globe, before the eyes of both Jews and Gentiles, and even before the eyes of the tyrannical Nebuchadnezzar. Zedekiah's indifference to this sacred cause revealed that he considered the political objectives he hoped to achieve with his rebellious behavior more desirable and important than the mandate to faithfully represent Hashem's truth, wisdom, and compassion in the world. In that way, we see the failing of Zedekiah as emblematic, as really an exemplification of the general failure of the kings of Yisrael and Yehuda to achieve their divine purpose, the purpose that had been given to them, which was to use their power and sovereignty to bring recognition of God into the world. It wasn't just Zedekiah as an individual. He really represented the failure of the kingdom as a whole. For us, the lesson to be derived from Zedekiah is first and foremost the importance of exhibiting reverence for Hashem's name and behaving in ways that reflect positively on him and on his Torah. This means conducting ourselves honestly and truthfully in our dealings with all of God's creatures and not allowing ourselves to rationalize or justify immoral or unethical activity, no matter how compelling the pretext may seem. Of course, the book concludes with a clear signal that the story of Jewish nationhood is far from over. A representative of the Davidic dynasty, Jehoiachin, still lives in Babylonia. Favor has shone upon him, and his dignity has been restored. Even at the darkest moments in our history, a sliver of hope remains, and we are reminded that the light of our glorious destiny has not yet been extinguished. With Hashem's help, against all odds, we will rise again.